across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And he is so ready for a holiday weekend. Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday. It's September. September 1st, and another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app or podcast or Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. However you get here, we're glad to have you here in the state of Wisconsin Sense where we unpack the news each morning. Here's what's coming on tap for this Friday. Our first hour dedicated to the saying, transparency for thee, but not for me. So-called fiscal conservatives love the idea of creating dashboards that help show how tax dollars are used, up to a point. When it was suggested recently that a dashboard for school spending should include the real expense of the vouchers that benefit private, often religious schools, well, conservatives changed their tune faster than any dashboard could measure. We'll talk about that. We'll also have our weekly visit with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about some of the stories that have been in the news this week. Our second hour, normally on Fridays, features a discussion with Mark Jacob, and we engage in some media criticism. And we're going to dwell on a couple of very heartfelt columns from other media critics this week that, to borrow the phrase from Bernie Sanders, they are saying in all earnestness, I am once again asking you, newsrooms, to stop normalizing authoritarianism. It just shouldn't be that hard to recognize that not every American whose life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is a product of our democracy would actually protect and defend our democracy. Some Americans, we have to say it out loud, some Americans do want to overthrow free elections, and some of those people are in powerful or influential positions. So why do our newsrooms cover them as just another day in American politics or even just another day in the modern Republican Party? We'll talk to Mark about that. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports. Maybe I might have to cut his mic off when he starts gloating too much about the Cubs taking 2 out of 3 from the Brewers. But speaking of the Brewers, I've got 4 tickets to give you to Sunday afternoon's game. It was going to be 2, but we didn't have a winner yesterday in our Brewers trivia contest, so we're going to make it a Wisconsin trivia contest, and we're going to give away 4 tickets to the game against the Phillies on Sunday afternoon if you answer a Wisconsin trivia question coming up at about 6:50. That's a great text. I haven't even given the phone number yet, and the texts are already coming in. Let me give that first. 844-967-2789. You can call or text it. You can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. You can put a comment on our Facebook video feeds. And already Wes from Middleton is asking, where's the dashboard for Michael Gabelman and his sham investigation of the 2020 election? Is there a dashboard to measure the size of the tax cut for John Menard and Diane Hendricks? Wes, these are perfect questions. Please keep them coming. I will tell you that more than 15 years ago in the legislature, there was a proposal from Republicans for what they wanted. They didn't call it a dashboard, I think. They called it like a Google checkbook or something that you should be able to see line by line all of the spending that's done by government. They thought that way when you see something, you can go, aha, you know, that's waste. And you understood the sentiment. I also understood that they were going to pick things that are essential to others, but they won't think it's essential, so they're going to call it waste. But we're going to get into the whole notion of, you know, now using it for voucher schools. We're also going to get the weekend forecast from Weatherology. I believe Jennifer Vuchitsky is going to be with us along the way coming up in our next hour. And we need to say good morning to Aaron Zommers as well, down in Madison, who's been amazingly patient with what's been a long work week up here, and I know I'm certainly ready for the weekend. I got to think you are.
Oh, definitely. I don't know exactly when I'm going, either today or tomorrow, but going to go camping with some friends and just relax, enjoy the nice weather.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be warm, but I know I'm going to enjoy some pontoon time. You know, the boat gets a little, you know, messy, a little full of schmutz and cobwebs and things. And so yesterday, we actually lent the boat to some friends. Actually, my wife, Sherry, was the captain and took some other people around Lake Wissota. And so that was the catalyst that we needed to actually give the boat a really good cleaning, a really good wipe down. And I am eternally grateful to her for being, you know, the first mate on that particular endeavor. But now we have this nice clean boat that we used yesterday for friends. We're like, let's use it for ourselves. So we're just going to spend a lot of time out there this weekend. So I hope everybody who does get out on the water, boat's safe. And hopefully, despite the hot weather, hopefully you're still good and comfortable out there camping.
Yeah, I guess we will see. Just wear some sunscreen while you're out there on the boat.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, definitely. There's always some handy in there. And I want to take this final minute before our first break to say congratulations to our friend Kristen Bry. You haven't seen a lot about it on social media yet, but Milwaukee Magazine named her the favorite radio personality in the Milwaukee area. And she put up a little TikTok video expressing, you know, her gratitude and a bit of modesty, and she really shouldn't. She's terrific. I remember when she first moved back to Wisconsin and was kind of thinking out loud about what she'd want to do, and she was making these short videos, and she did a few of them for Up North News, and she was on some other podcast. And then when we heard about Civic Media being put together and that she was going to get a radio show, I mean, I knew from the very beginning how good it was going to be. It has continued to be that way. 10 to noon on most Civic Media radio stations, 11 to noon in Madison. If you haven't checked it out, you can do it today, because yours truly is going to be on the show at 10:30 this morning playing her weekly game, Best, Worst, and Weirdest Headlines of the Week. So congratulations again, Kristen. So very well deserved. Take a break here and we will unpack the news right after this break, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning. When you're here, you're up north. We'll be back. Don't pretend you didn't know we were going to be playing this tune today a lot. So are we going to play it again on the 21st of September? Yes. Yes, we are. But it's September now, September the 1st. So we invite Earth, Wind, and Fire to join us on this nice Friday morning. 6 a.m. temps and highs around the area. Up here on Lake Wissota, it is 55 degrees. Still just a little bit of a chill here when the wind picks up a bit. But it's going to be 87 today, and it's going to be 97 by Monday. Madison, you're at 52 on your way to a high of 83. Waukesha, 48. Going to be 82 for a high. La Crosse, 61. Heading up to 86. And the folks listening in Wausau on Bull Falls Radio, you're at 54 degrees on your way to a high of 83. Again, a full forecast for the entire state of Wisconsin coming up from Weatherology in our next hour. The daily newsletter from Up North News is out right now. You can subscribe to it right on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. And Christina this morning has put in there, as usual, the In Case You Missed It. Looks to be about 9 or 10 links here to various stories that we covered throughout the week. There's also a guide to the upcoming 2023 Taste of Madison. Last call for Old World Wisconsin before it closes for the season on September 24th. And then my editorial about the battle for the Brewers. And even though the Brewers have been hot lately, could the legislature put an end to any of their winning streaks by not approving a deal to help fix up the stadium and keep the team from looking elsewhere? And that includes a link in the newsletter to another website that is speculating, what are the top five candidates for teams where the Brewers could go if they relocate? So for that and more, get our newsletter. Click, again, newsletter in the top banner of upnorthnewswi.com. Or over at that same website, click store in the top banner, and you could get yourself t-shirts, tote bags, all manner of merchandise is there. Again, upnorthnewswi.com. Just click store in the top banner there. Before I get off of the stadium thing, this was in, I think, yesterday's newsletter. Christina had a link to The Athletic, the sports news site. And apparently NFL writers were asked to rank NFL venues. What is their favorite stadium? What's their best stadium in terms of covering a game? Somehow or another, Lambeau Field came in number 3 on that list. Number 2 on the list was Soldier Field, really? And number 1, U.S. Bank Stadium, home of the Minnesota Vikings, which I can only guess is, again, you're asking sports writers, and so it's the newest stadium, so it's got all the newest, you know, bells and whistles and luxuries, but I don't know that that's how you'd really measure what stadium you'd want to go to watch a football game. I don't know that Lambeau is number 3 on anybody's list that way, but again, it was linked to in our newsletter yesterday, or you could go over to The Athletic and check it out. You could also check out our special back-to-school edition of our daily newsletter. We've actually put a direct link to that one right on our website, so even if you're not a newsletter subscriber, go to upnorthnewswi.com and scroll down to the story about our back-to-school newsletter edition, and that'll have a link that'll take you right to the whole thing. Hey, with Labor Day on Monday, we will not have a live show here. We'll be back live on Tuesday. There will be one live show on Monday that you should hear about. Earl Ingram is going to be appearing and broadcasting live from Labor Fest at Milwaukee's Festival Grounds from 8 to 11 on Monday, on Labor Day morning. If you're in the Milwaukee area, you should head on down. I've been there once. It's a great occasion. Labor Fest is free and open to the public. It features live music for adults and families, children's entertainment, bingo, a classic car show, a union raffle with a $5,000 grand prize, and a parade that steps off at 11 a.m. Earl has set up some important interviews. So catch Earl Ingram Monday at the festival grounds or tune in Monday on the radio or on the Civic Media app. I would tell you about the Brewers, but they were off yesterday getting set to take on the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend. 7:15, I think, today, 6:10 tomorrow. And then it's a noon game on Sunday. It's normally 1 o'clock. Well, why is that? Well, the answer is going to frustrate you a little bit. Sunday's game will not be on the usual outlet, Bally Sports Wisconsin. It's going to be on Peacock, the streaming service from NBC. They worked out a deal with Major League Baseball that every Sunday throughout the season, they would get the first game of the day. There'd be one game at noon Central Time, and then all the other games start. I have no idea if this has been a successful experiment for Peacock. I just know that much like Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV, it's a darn nuisance for fans who are expecting to see a Brewers game or any Major League Baseball game on their regular station and then have to go searching around the interwebs for it. You know, is it on Apple? Is it on Peacock? Is it on YouTube? YouTube gets some of these games. And while I understand they're trying to build, you know, a larger base of platforms and build support for these platforms, it's also downright annoying. So I wanted to make sure you knew ahead of time on Sunday that the game starts earlier at noon and it's on Peacock. And I believe, don't hold me to this, I didn't look it up, but I believe the Peacock games, I think you can see it for free, but you have to register for an account. I don't think you have to be a paid subscriber to Peacock at that point, but you're also going to get bothered to, hey, you should subscribe to Peacock. So just take that into consideration. If you want to watch the game, You're going to have to jump through a few hurdles over here. One quick question here from, let's see, is this Mary? Yeah, Mary puts up on Facebook, help me understand why American Family Field isn't able to fix the stadium. Mary, that's a great question. And while I'm not going to pretend to have all of the information here, there is something basic that I want to address in this question. Why isn't American Family Field able to fix the stadium? American Family Field was funded in large part, by a special sales tax in the 5-county metro area of Milwaukee. And everybody understood that. Not everybody was happy about it, but we won't get into that. We'll just say that that tax was there, and it helped fund the construction of the stadium, and then paying off that construction over a period of years. And then once that was paid off, that tax was allowed to expire. Now, one point of view is that that was the right thing to do. They said the tax was for building the stadium. They're done building the stadium. Let the tax expire. People don't like the idea of, you know, taxes that, you know, temporary taxes that never go away. I'm not in that group. I'm going to be straight up with you here. But I think what they should have said early on is it's not just for the construction. But again, anybody who's built anything knows that there will be maintenance and upkeep and repairs and special circumstances. And the day that I heard that that tax was expiring, I thought, oh, no. Nobody's going to think to set aside some other stream of funds. They're going to wait till there's a crisis or something. And then suddenly it's, hey, we need a whole bunch of money and we need it right now. And that's where we are. There's enough maintenance. There's been enough deferred maintenance from a facility that's now, what, 22 years old. There's been enough going on behind the scenes. It looks great when you sit there. It's when you get into the underbelly of it, like they've done with a couple of TV crews, and you see what the issue is. And the issue is real, but the Brewers don't own the stadium. The stadium is owned by a special, it's basically a quasi-government board, but it doesn't have any taxing authority anymore. And so consequently, it doesn't have a lot of revenue coming in beyond, I would imagine, maybe through ticket sales and things like that. And so we got to this point, and Governor Evers said, okay, well, this is economic development. It's going to cost a whole lot of money. How about if the state puts up $290 million from its $7 billion surplus, and then the team is going to put up so much. That number I don't remember off the tip of my tongue here. And Republicans in the legislature said no. Said, nope, we're not going to go along with that. We think we can get a better deal. Well, as often happens with so many things, with the tax cut plan and with the child care plan and so many other things, we say, okay, what's the plan? And we get silence. There is no plan. We're still waiting to hear what's the Republican plan for American Family Field. So I don't like that there's this speculation about the Brewers moving, because it then leads to bad feelings like, oh, the team is trying to blackmail us. And yeah, any team can get to a point where it looks like blackmail. We're not there yet. But you have to ask yourself, is there a role for the state, for the locals, for the local governments in what is an economic development situation? Do you have to bring back, you know, that tax? Do you have to directly spend out of a surplus? Or do you come up with something else? And here's the thing that I really thought was interesting, was that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said something to the effect of that, well, when we come up with a package, it's going to ask for more from the millionaire athletes who use the stadium. And that makes perfect sense. But I wish he would listen to himself. What did he just say? That maybe taxing the millionaires who benefit from something might be the way to go. And instead, he's trying to give a tax cut to all the millionaires and billionaires and other high six-digit families in Wisconsin. So it's okay to tax millionaire athletes for something that makes sense. But when it comes to, you know, educating our kids and paving the roads and all of those things, apparently that's another matter. So Mary, a very good question. And thank you for letting me try to give my stab at an answer here. All right, let me get to the transparency for thee, but not for me. And Corinne Hess from Wisconsin Public Radio really has a good overarching article that you should read about how Wisconsin's private schools are getting more taxpayer funds than ever before. But now a coalition of groups supporting voucher schools is unhappy that somebody's considering creating a dashboard to track the amount of public money that goes into these voucher schools. And remember, this came about because of a Republican bill. A Republican bill signed by Governor Evers in 2021 created an advisory committee to set up a financial information dashboard to give taxpayers information about individual school and school district spending. It has to include the total amount of local, state, federal funding, cost per pupil, how funds are distributed. Clearly, when Republicans passed the bill, they were thinking that this was about, you know, making the public schools accountable. But the advisory committee and the Department of Public Instruction said, yeah, we should include voucher schools and the very real cost, how that $444 million in taxpayer funds that goes to private, usually religious schools, how it drains away from public school districts. And suddenly, the Republicans running the legislature's Joint Finance Committee this week put the brakes on the dashboard, said, maybe we'll think about this a little bit longer. Yeah, maybe they will. Kia Vakil is coming up next. You're up north.
In the Ad Council.
It's 6:33 now on this Friday morning on Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow here, Kia Vakil over there, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom out in California. Kia, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I am well.
All right. Not nearly as overwhelming a week news-wise as in the past, but we've got a couple of updates to pass along in some of those stories. First off, there's former President Donald Trump facing all of these various trials in various places. And I think maybe the most noteworthy update to give this week is from Georgia, where he did not have to appear again, but he has now made a formal plea, right?
Yes. Donald Trump on Thursday pled not guilty in the Georgia case. He's been charged with a RICO statute for his role trying to overturn the 2020 election there. So he pled not guilty, as he has done in all of his other cases. That's where things are at right now. But you're seeing, you know, a mountain of pushback from figures in the right, both in Georgia, who are now targeting the Fulton County DA because, you know, holding Trump accountable for trying to break the law is apparently not something Republicans will support no matter what.
Right. And that's where you get into the whole notion of, and we've had this talk here as well, of trying to defund investigations, whether it's in Georgia for the DA there, Fani Willis. We've certainly had the U.S. House Judiciary Committee go after some of the other figures involved in some of the other Trump cases. And I was going to say, Kia, that this seems to me, all of these things seem to really smack of dirty pool. But I learned off air before, you've never heard the phrase dirty pool before, which only makes me so worried about the age difference between us that apparently that's not a phrase anymore.
Well, is it also like a regional phrase?
No. I think it's just something that's going to die with my generation. And, you know, you kids have your LOL and everything.
Well, I'm no longer a kid. I am approaching my, almost 32.
So oh my gosh. Oh,
I'm not stating that I'm old, but I'm stating that objectively I'm no longer a child. But I've never heard the term dirty pool until about an hour ago.
I thought that was just great. So shall we say, much as I had to change it in my copy as well, shall we say that this might be an instance of a dirty trick to defund investigations?
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, you're seeing Republicans in the House, like you mentioned, you know, the very honorable Matt Gaetz of Florida is leading one of the efforts. And then there's some other folks, Andy Ogles from Tennessee and, you know, some other similarly hard right figures who want to defund the special counsel who's trying to hold Trump accountable at the federal level for trying to overturn the 2020 election. You've obviously for months going on years now heard the right increasingly talk about defunding the FBI. We have a presidential candidate who wants to abolish the FBI, which if you went back a decade and told, you know, the Mitt Romney era of the Republican Party this, they look at you like you had six heads.
Yeah.
The FBI, you know, is not a liberal agency by any standard. None of those agencies are. If anything, they tack to the right, probably realistically center right. But, you know, it just goes to show, you know, that anyone, you know, is trying to hold Trump accountable for what we saw happen on January 6th and the weeks before it is a non-starter for, you know, the Freedom Caucus and people like that in the Republican Party. And they may well push a government shutdown if they don't get what they want, and they won't get what they want. You know, that's too much for the couple dozen moderates, quote unquote, left in the Republican Party in Congress. And certainly it's too much for Democrats in the Senate.
Any kind of a shutdown, again, yeah, almost entirely has blown up in the faces of Republicans because they're seen as not wanting to responsibly govern. And there's no reason to think that that wouldn't happen again. Not that that's going to stop them, but no. I just see, again, it's the Coyote and the Roadrunner cartoons all over again. So when you're looking for, you know, justice, whether it's against a former president or in the case of the, you know, the Proud Boys, you know, for their role in January 6th, you have law enforcement that whatever their internal political stripes, they're going to do their job. And that was definitely something we saw with the leader of the Proud Boys.
Yes. So we saw Joseph Biggs, who was one of the leaders, a former leader in the Proud Boys, which is, you know, this far right group, you know, very misogynistic, very extremist, militant. They were heavily involved on January 6th. There's been testimony that they back channeled with members of Trump's orbit. So Joseph Biggs, again, former member from Florida, was sentenced to 17 years in prison on Thursday for his role on January 6th. That is the longest sentence on anyone involved that day. And, you know, that is follows the Oath Keepers, another similar group. Their leader or founder, Stuart Rhodes, was found guilty of seditious conspiracy, I believe, a month or two ago at this point, and sentenced to 18 years in prison. So there is being some accountability for these leaders of these extremist groups. But the problem is and you're not seeing quite the same level of pushback from Republicans on that. But the moment it targets anyone involved who is a member of the Republican Party in, you know, in political circles, that's when they step up and refuse to, you know, acknowledge that anyone in their party might have had a role and might need to be held accountable for what happened on the 6th.
It just it again can't be said near enough that we all, and I'll talk about this in the next hour with Mark Jacob, we all need to stop this fantasy that every American who has these rights and liberties, thanks to our democracy, is supportive of democracy. There are some who just flat out are not. And simply because you might agree with their partisan leanings or otherwise, there's still no excuse for, you know, any countenance of people trying to seek the overthrow of the government. I can't believe I have to say that out loud. Let's get away from the politics and from the insurrection and all of that. Let's get to things that are kind of affecting the everyday lives of Americans.
Sure.
We'll talk about overtime pay in just a moment, but let's start first with drug prices, something that it appears President Biden is going to make one of the centerpieces of his reelection bid, and rightly so. Everybody knows how much more they're paying for prescription drugs than they would like. And so especially in this case for Medicare patients, they're going to start seeing some real relief after what I would argue is 20 years of gouging by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, at least. So when Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law last year, one of the most important parts of that law is a measure that allows Medicare to negotiate the price of 10 high-cost drugs. And that's 10 to start. So those 10 will go into effect in 2026. It'll be 15 each of the next 2 years, and then 20 in 2029 and every year after. So basically what that means is in about a decade from now, you're going to have a couple hundred, at least about 100 drugs, maybe more. I can't do the math that quickly, that are going to be substantially more affordable. And these are really common drugs. One of them that in these first 10 is Eliquis, which costs the government $16 billion a year. That's an astronomical sum of money. And so it's to prevent blood clots. My dad took Eliquis. Like, I know many people who've taken it who are older. There's diabetes drugs, there's cancer treatments. Some of these are really, really expensive drugs. And reducing the cost of them to seniors is huge, and will make a massive difference for people.
And, you know, Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee, we've heard from her about this. making the case that, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, this provision in it, is not designed to, you know, somehow target or go after pharmaceutical companies, but rather to do what everybody else gets to do, and that's negotiate bulk pricing. You have a government that is already supportive through research and development credits and other things, supportive of, you know, developing life-saving drugs. It's just that it's simple common sense that you should be able to negotiate the best price possible when you have that many customers, in this case, yep, Medicare recipients. And so when Republicans, you know, said that Medicare couldn't do that 20 years ago when they passed Part D, I thought that was just outrageous. It's outrageous that it's taken 20 years to fix it, but yep, it is finally getting fixed. And that's going to make a real difference year after year, like you said.
Yeah, people are going to save hundreds of dollars a year, maybe thousands, depending on, you know, which drugs they take and how many of them. You know, some of these drugs people are spending $5,000-$6,000 a year on people on Medicare. So between these drug prices going down, the $2,000 a year out of pocket cap on drugs, that's part of the IRA, the $35 insulin cap, it's a huge deal. And, you know, it's important to highlight what you just said, that these drug companies get government funded research and development. The government helps these companies produce these products. And these companies are, many of them are suing to stop this 10 drug negotiation measure because it partially threatens their profits. And these are companies that made $12 billion in revenue from Eliquis last year, if you're Bristol Myers Squibb. You know, Xarelto, which is made by Johnson & Johnson and Bayer, they reported those companies nearly $5 billion in revenue just from that drug in 2022. So these companies are making a lot of money. And so to have those profits slightly come down so that seniors aren't starving or going homeless in order to take their medication feels, you know, widely like common sense. And that's why you see 85, 90% of Americans support this measure.
And that's why, again, you know, the president's going to run on it and basically dare Republicans to run as, you know, whoa, we want your drug prices to be higher. And remember, it's not just, you know, the folks on Medicare that are saving money. The government is saving money in purchasing them. And so if the government saves money, that reduces the deficit. All right, we're heading into Labor Day weekend here. So let's talk about overtime pay and then quickly touch on union support as well. Tell me about a couple of new items there.
Yeah, so on, I believe it was Wednesday, the Department of Labor announced a new rule that would basically expand the number of workers eligible for overtime pay by 3.6 million. So that's 3.6 million more people who would be eligible for salaried workers who would be eligible for overtime pay. Basically, right now, if you're salaried earning up to about $35,000, you're guaranteed overtime pay. If you're salaried but you earn above that, your employer is not required to give you overtime. That is almost, you know, in certain places, $35,000 gets you very little. If you're in California, which has insane housing costs, it gets you pretty much nothing. Mm-hmm. If you're in Wisconsin, it probably gets you a little bit more, but that's not enough to really support a family. And there's no excuse. If you're working more than 40 hours a week, you should be paid for more than 40 hours a week. So obviously, you know, this is targeting executive, administrative, and professional workers. So it would raise that threshold to $55,000. So, you know, still working middle class people. This is not going to benefit, you know, lawyers making 500 grand a year. It's benefiting, you know, people who work in factories and who work in manufacturing. So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then finally, how is union support looking as we head into Labor Day?
It's looking quite good. We've seen a few surveys come out recently. I'll tout one specifically that was from this group called GBAO Strategies. It's a pollster. The AFL-CIO commissioned the poll. It shows that 71% of Americans approve of labor unions, 75% support workers going on strike. But the most notable finding is the age splits. So among people over 50, those numbers are just 67% supporting unions and 72% supporting strikes. But for people under 30, those numbers are 9 and 10. So 88% support unions, 90% support strikes. That's just huge. And that's including Republican millennials and Gen Zers and independent ones. So, you know, and it makes sense to me. These people grew up in an economy that is increasingly unequal, mm-hmm. and that's happened as union membership has declined. So they see that unions are a positive thing.
And frankly, they've seen my generation and older spend our adult years just kind of rolling over and saying, well, I guess, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, they remember seeing Reagan fire the air traffic controllers. And thankfully, a younger generation is fighting a lot harder, and we're all going to be better off for that. Kiev Akil, thank you so much. You can read his stuff over at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat.
All right, get set. Coming up next, today's history lesson and music break, and we are going to be giving away 4 tickets to Sunday afternoon's Brewers game against San Diego. 844-967-2789, a Wisconsin trivia question, is coming up next. Happy birthday to Barry Gibb, surviving member of the Bee Gees, 77 years old today. Conway Twitty, remember him? Born this day in 1933, he passed away in 1993. Conway Twitty was born Harold Lloyd Jenkins in Mississippi. Lily Tomlin is 84 years old today. Happy birthday to her. And Phil McGraw, Dr. Phil, is 73 years old today. Before we do anything else, let's open up the phone lines right now. 844-967-2789. One Wisconsin trivia question gets you 4 tickets to the Brewers-Phillies game on Sunday afternoon. Here we go. Wisconsin is named the Badger State, not because of the furry animal, but because of people who once engaged in what occupation during the early 1800s? What were people doing in Wisconsin in the early 1800s that got them the nickname Badgers? And Wisconsin is the Badger State. 844-967-2789. First person through with the correct answer and can have the tickets emailed to you. You're going to get 4 tickets to Sunday afternoon's game at American Family Field. All right, back to today's history lesson and music break. Let's see. There's a song here that was number one this day in 1962. And I've got a friend, Sheila Dutton. She's an American Family agent up in Bloomer. And she claims this song was written for her, but she wasn't alive back then. This is Tommy Rowe, who wrote Sheila when he was just 14 years old.
Sweet little Sheila, you'll know her if you see her. Blue eyes and a ponytail.
Got another birthday here. Gloria Estefan is 66 years old today, born in Cuba, raised in Miami. The number one song this day in 1984 was by the late, great Tina Turner.
You must try to ignore that it means more than.
More birthdays to share for you here. If you watch Ridiculousness on MTV, then you're familiar with Chanel West Coast and that laugh of hers, that kind of chipmunk laugh. She is 35 years old today. And the actress Zendaya is 27 years old today. And she's been in like the 3 biggest blockbuster movies of all time. Hall & Oates, on this day in 1981, released the Private Eyes album, and it contained 2 number one hits. Of course, the title track, Private Eyes, and this one. And that'll take care of today's history lesson and music break as we turn to Jeff from Madison, who I think now has plans for Sunday afternoon. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for listening. And why are we called the Badger State? What were people doing way back when in our early days of white settlement here in Wisconsin?
We were miners.
We were miners. We were lead miners specifically, and rather than build any houses or shacks, they would burrow into the ground and sleep there because the money was so good, until the California Gold Rush came along and suddenly everybody was no longer interested in Wisconsin lead and they headed out west. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much. I hope you're going to be able to put those tickets to good use. You got some people in mind to bring to the game?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, hey, have a wonderful time. Have a safe and fun Labor Day. Thanks again. Have a great day. All right, thanks. Let's turn to the mailbag here for a sec here, because there's a string of comments that have come in on a couple of different topics here that I wanted to address. So we had Mary's question asking, you know, why isn't American Family Field able to fix its own stadium? So we talked about the funding. Roger has written in asking, are we also going to tax the acts who perform live concerts there as well? And I'm pretty sure the short answer to that is going to be yes. When you have, again, these acts coming in, the stadium district board can always take a little off the top, I guess you could say, or the state could, to help fund these things. Roger also notes, remember, if the Brewers do leave, we will never have Major League Baseball again, because that would be our second team to leave Milwaukee, of course, referencing the Braves back in the late 1950s. Mary wrote back in, thanks for helping me understand. It doesn't surprise me after your great explanation why we are where we are at. Mary then goes on to write, why do Republicans want to get rid of Social Security, but then deny that when they are put in a corner? Referencing our conversation just a bit ago with Kia Vakil about, again, Republican budget proposals that always, in terms of the math, show that they would get rid of these programs, but they never say the words, we want to get rid of these programs. And so Ron responds. Ron says, Mary explained to me how Social Security will remain when it can't sustain itself. There needs to be reform of some type. Not one single Republican has said to eliminate Social Security. They want to reform it. It's a good point, Ron, that I think is worthy of discussion. Because, again, you're right. Not one single Republican has said to eliminate Social Security. They say they want to reform it. But, again, when you look at the numbers, it would likely mean that either Social Security or Medicare would cover far fewer people or provide far fewer benefits. That's not to say it doesn't need reform. These programs do need reform, and one of the ways you could do that would be to raise the cap on things like the payroll taxes that fund Medicare and Social Security. If I'm not mistaken, the Social Security tax runs out at something like $140,000 or something like that. So if you're making $140,000 and less, every one of your paychecks, you know, has a little tax taken out for Social Security. If you're one of these, you know, people who makes $10 million a year, well, you make the $140,000 by about January 3rd or 4th. And then you're done. You're done paying Social Security taxes. Now, the argument there is, well, yeah, because everybody gets roughly the same kind of benefit. You don't get a larger Social Security benefit because you made a lot of money in your working years. And that's true. But if we're talking about how to fund a program and how to fund it in a way that reforms it, then perhaps you have to look at something like a progressive method of taxation, where the people who are making eight figures incomes a year would be asked to pay a little bit more, so that we don't have what we had before Social Security and Medicare, which was people unable to retire because they couldn't save up enough, couldn't get treated when they got sick, couldn't keep a roof over their heads. So we created this basically old age pension plan called Social Security. Everybody wants it to stay, and I actually believe many Republicans want it to stay too. We just need a more honest discussion of reforming it, even if the reforms aren't going to make everybody happy. No single reform is. All right, we'll talk more about this and a lot of other topics in our next hour here on a Friday heading into Labor Day weekend on Up North News Radio. We'll be back.